Welcome back to the Roundtable's live broadcast from the press porch at Tanglewood. I'm Joe Donahue. This press porch is located in a grove of trees, a short walk from the famed shed where the world's greatest musicians are tuning up as we speak. And we are also delighted because we are back here on this press porch, which is just one of the most gorgeous places in the world.
It's absolutely true. It reminds me of Camp Bronx House. This season, Shakespeare and Company.
No, sorry. Wait, hold on.
This season, we have a lot of things to talk about today, including Shakespeare and Company.
That's true. And we'll do that. Where are we here?
Wherever we are.
Hold on. I think this is, we'll find it. Anyway, here you go, Alan. Yeah,
thank you. We'll share.
There you go.
My role here is just to watch this.
Anyway, I'm Alan Chartok. We're overlooking the Stockbridge Bowl. We said that already, didn't we?
No, yeah. You can say that.
And it's difficult to believe we could broadcast from a more beautiful, important, or historic musical setting that reminds me of Camp Bronx House.
Do you want to welcome our gracious host?
Yeah. We now welcome our gracious host. I am sitting in front of his own bobblehead, managing director of the BSO, Mark Volpe. He points out that his bobblehead, unlike mine, is made in America.
Well, he's here to tell us about his bobblehead. He's here to tell us about the amazing season that's ongoing in this Bernstein Centennial, as well as all the cool stuff happening. And Mark Volpe, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Boy, that was fun for you to watch, wasn't it?
No matter what I do, it can't be worse than what I just witnessed.
We set the bar pretty darn high, didn't we?
That's great. So you just got a tremendous honor here at Tanglewood. You guys were named into one of the most prestigious and rarefied of all honor societies. You want to tell us about that?
Well, I think it's indicative of the power of music, but also the role Tanglewood plays in the world of music. We were just inducted into the Hall of Fame, and what was interesting is there are only 133, and the Boston Symphony was already inducted, but if you look at the 133, about 10 or 11 of them are Tanglewood people. You know, it's Ozawa, it's Fiedler, it's Michael Tilson Thomas, it's Aaron Copland, it's Koussevitzky, obviously our founder. So it's nice that the institution, most of the Hall of Fame consists of individuals, so there are just a few institutions of note, and we happen to be one of them, and it's a great honor, and it was fun to have a ceremony here, and we'll see going beyond that.
Well, let me ask you. Normally during this time, we have our panel, which we're not having today because we're here and we couldn't be more happy. But I know one of the topics that we talked about yesterday, because the story broke while we were on the air, and that we would probably talk about today, is the death of Aretha Franklin. And I'm curious as to, I would assume, given your long tenure in this music industry, that you have crossed paths with this legend.
Well, not only did I cross paths, I spent 7 years in Detroit. And so she sang with the Detroit Symphony on occasion, and in fact, big high-profile occasions, like when we played for the G7 and a few other moments where the orchestra is celebrating a bigger event. And she also sang with the Boston Pops and on occasion. And I think what's interesting, what I can share, and it goes beyond Aretha, but Aretha is probably the most important part of it, is the role music has in the Black church. I mean, much of what she shared with the world came out of a gospel tradition, and she, her father was a minister. I met her father a few times. I certainly knew her. I mean, we weren't close personal friends, but engaged her in Detroit. And I think the other family I got to know in Detroit of note was the Gordy family, which is the founding family of Motown. And right. And it was a genius business approach or strategy in that he went into the Black churches and heard, there's Mary Wilson, there's Dinah Ross, there are the Temps, there, you know, the Tops. And then he heard about this little kid in Gary, Indiana, named Michael, and he went down to Gary, Indiana, and heard him in a church. And likewise, Aretha came out of that incredible tradition, and literally her father. And these churches, congregations are 10,000-12,000, and some of the most amazing music I've ever heard. And listen, I heard a singer almost as good as Aretha Franklin, which is hard to imagine. And I approached her with a few people from the Detroit Symphony, begging her to come and sing with the orchestra. And her basic, I don't want to mimic the accent because it'd be, you know, insensitive, but she basically said, "I only sing for God." It was a voice only God could create. I mean, likewise with Aretha. So I had a great, you know, the great privilege of presenting her, I don't know, a handful of times and spending time with her. And she came out of a tough environment where, you know, she insisted on being paid in advance in cash. I mean, that, I don't know if you recall, I was there, when she was, because the same year Seiji Ozawa was put into the Kennedy Center Honors Program, and Carole King, you know, who wrote some of the greatest songs ever, and Aretha was part of it, and people, I don't know if they picked up the symbolism. She brought her purse on, and she put her purse on the piano.
On the piano, yeah.
And for people who knew what that was about, that's, I got paid in advance, the money's in the purse, and the money is with me, and I'm going to do a show that only she could do.
Well, and it's iconic. I mean, they were playing it left and right over the last 24 hours.
Beautiful. I've been so consumed here. I love Seiji, you know, one of my close friends. The winning segment of that show, and I was there for 2.5 hours, was Aretha. I mean, there was no competing with Aretha.
Yeah.
Do you, we'll talk about Bernstein too, because that's who obviously this season is revolving around and for the centennial. And it's hard to believe, but the biggest events are still coming, even though you're coming to the end of the season.
Well, one thing about Bernstein, speaking of the Kennedy Center, he wrote the piece that opened the Kennedy Center, obviously the most important cultural institution in our nation's capital. And likewise, he was one of the first honorees, but he's our guy. I mean, if you look at Bernstein, of course, he had a relationship with the New York Philharmonic, was music director there. He had a relationship in Tel Aviv and Vienna and certainly even Sapporo, Japan. But the institution he had the longest relationship with, where he started and where he ended, was Tanglewood.
Yeah.
And so when the people around Bernstein's family came to us and said the actual birthday has to be at Tanglewood, you know, the 100th anniversary. And so that inspired us to try to put together a program that would reflect all of the elements, you know, the show, the concert music, the people that inspired him, Aaron Copland, certainly Mahler, all the people that he, you know, touched, you know, and a young Yo-Yo Ma, maybe not quite as young now, but still
looks young.
Yeah, he still looks fantastic. Still incredibly vibrant, and then of course Midori, who basically had a whole career launched by breaking a few strings playing a serenade with Lenny on the podium, and so, you know, that we're going to recreate all these moments, and his life was so full, but I think we've put together a program that will really highlight his genius. And people don't realize how at that point the country's evolved subsequent to that in a great way. But you know, it was a very Eurocentric, you know, field. And Bernstein really was the first American. I don't think that's been played up enough. You know, certainly the West Side Story and all the other great pieces and Candide, and we've every weekend have featured something that he did that obviously changed the world. But one way he changed the world that I don't, you know, is all those old European conductors. He made it possible for a brash young American, you know, and a completely different cultural orientation to take the country by storm.
When I saw West Side Story here the other night with the lightning storm outside and the film inside.
But what do you mean? It hasn't rained one day here this summer.
It was phenomenal. Yeah. It was phenomenal what the orchestra did. How did they do that? You know, so that you're watching the film and they're playing every note that whoever was on screen was playing. It's unbelievable.
Well, first you have the technology where you can extract the dialogue and have the dialogue, but no music. So then you get to supply the music. And what you need is a phenomenal orchestra, which we have, and also a conductor that knows what they're doing and knows how to read the screen. If you notice that he had a screen in front of him and there are all these bars going across, and so the bars are saying go faster, go slower, end here, But, you know, you, every time I hear that, and the movie, you could argue, and Steven Spielberg's actually doing a remake as we speak. I think it's being shot.
No.
That's going to contemporize the movie. The music is the music. Music is certainly timeless. But you realize how great from tune to tune to tune. I mean, it's just, you know, most musicals, they have, you know, a few things that you go, yeah, that's the hit, or that's going to be part of the record, or whatever. And you listen to that piece, and you know, we're going to reprise some of it again on the 25th. There's no wasted music there.
Apparently, Bernstein was not happy with being remembered, you know, in just large part for this.
Yeah, but you know, it's of course, because his life was so much richer, and certainly he wrote, you know, so many other pieces, but. You know, hard to argue with success at a certain point. You know, that is, in terms of you know, it's significant in terms of revenue generation for you know, all of the Bernstein empire. But beyond that, you know, it's a piece that you know, transcends classical music and transcends orchestral music. It's a piece that virtually every kid, you know, has heard a tune or two from.
We have a few minutes left, and just as I was pulling in this morning, I see the work that's being done on the Tanglewood Learning Institute. How's all of that going? Remind us what it is.
Sure. We're building four buildings, and you know, there you think about the history of Tanglewood in 1937 during the Depression. We create this incredible festival, and of course 1940 during the war, we weren't quite in it. We create the school that's going to train the next generation of musicians, and of course Ozawa Hall. And what this, I think, is an embodiment, these four buildings, where we're going to have a learning institute and programming through the course of the summer, and then the buildings are winterized so that there'll be activity through the entire year. And I think it's a real expression of optimism for the future. I think that's what Tanglewood is, whether it's the festival created in the Depression, the school created during the Second World War, and obviously times are a little troubling as we speak, and I don't want to get too political, but we're once again investing in the future by creating four buildings that will be here for decades to come, that will house activity of the Tanglewood Music Center, the school, of course, but equally critically is a new learning institute where we're going to bring, you know, people together and not just focus on music, but how music interrelates to a variety of disciplines, to political movements, explore you know, all sorts of notions and concepts, and I don't want to give away too much for next year. And the good news is you know, we're on schedule. These things are going to be ready for next summer, and this summer has been a summer of Bernstein, and next summer we'll have another huge opportunity to bring the world to Tanglewood. The international press, I've been doing international press interviews for the last 2-3 weeks. We're off to Europe. That's part of the impetus, but beyond that, they're fascinated with this new set of buildings and the Learning Institute, which will be launched next summer.
Will there be a full? Will there be a bobblehead in every room in the new institute?
Yeah, I mean, between you and me, I think we have enough bobbleheads to cover the world.
He got that covered. Yeah. Is when I'm going out on a limb here, but let me just ask this question: when you came on board, where was was this project at all on the drawing board?
No.
Okay. So this, in some way, is your legacy.
Yeah, but I don't think of it as my legacy. I think institutionally, and this doesn't happen. You know, I don't have, you know, this building, the buildings itself cost $32 million, and the programming is going to cost, you know, I don't have, you know, $50 or $60 million to make this happen. You know, there are people who are certainly...
No, but you can get it.
Well, no, I think I don't think it works that way. I think it's basically, it's sort of a gestalt kind of process where everyone comes together and dreams, and this came out of a strategic planning process. What's the next logical thing for Tanglewood to do? Taking what Koussevitzky started with, and what's the logical extension of that, and ultimately, you know, I don't want to take personal credit. I've just been one of many people who have worked, you know, countless hours to make this a reality.
Well, you are the best, but I have to just simply say, you know, we know that with all of the gestalt and all the rest that you're talking about, we do know that if you don't have the right guy doing what you're doing. But Joe, I have to be honest with you. I take some exception to your word legacy. He's far too young to have a legacy.
but when you look back at what, you know, what was here when you came and was here, you know, whenever it is that you leave, that there is that the imprint that you've put on the place.
Well,
and I understand that it takes a village. I get all of that, but it also takes a leader.
Well, and we have several and great artistic leadership and great volunteer leadership. But I think, you know, one of the things I came, the more time I spent with the Boston Symphony, and I, you know, to get into, you know, I've done this job here 20 plus years. I've been a CEO for over 30 years now in other orchestras. And so, but what makes Boston Symphony absolutely unique, every city in the United States of consequence, every city in Asia of consequence, Europe, South America, even some of the African cities have orchestras, and, you know, but what makes the Boston Symphony absolutely unique is Tanguard. And what Tanguard is, Tanguard certainly, and you know, technically and legally and every other way belongs to the Boston Symphony. It's our thing, but it really belongs to music. And it is as basically, you know, we only have 2 or 3 openings a year. We were training 150 players. We're training musicians for the rest of the world. You know, it's actually quite altruistic. You know, when you look at what we invest in the future of music, that benefits not just Boston, but everybody.
Very, very quickly, we have a brilliant commentator who was on at 7:45 this morning who said there's nothing like it. You know,
I love
United
that
States.
Guy. I love that guy.
Whoever that guy is.
That guy is awesome. He has a finger on the pulse. We love coming here. We love that you keep inviting us back. Hopefully you keep doing that. And we love that we're here for 3 hours and, of course, have such a wonderful relationship and partnership with you. And thank you very, very much, as always.
The feelings are reciprocal.
Thank you. Mark Volpe is with us and will be at Tanglewood all morning. You can find out more about all the cool stuff that Mark has talked about by going to tanglewood.org. We'll be back right after this short break.